Garfield Japan.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell them you don't business. I'm all about my business, but I ain't got no briefcase. Yeah, all I got's some whiskey. Open that whiskey, bring it to you. Yeah, I'm leaning up against the door, and my feet are to the floor, and we're messing on go.
What's up, faders? Welcome to yet another action-packed episode of Got Faded Japan, and I am your host, Johnny. And as you fine folks know, Got Faded Japan is about two dudes, booze, Japan, and the news. And faders, today we're here, and the news, I guess, is our really good friend, an amazing fader of the show. Fader of the show. God, you know, we got to stop drinking before we do this podcast. This is it. This is it. We are finished. This is the last podcast ever. We're done. Got Faded Japan is Got Faded finished. Oh, man. Faders, we are here with a local legend, Earl Lewis. Earl Lewis is, you're a local legend because you've like made so many dreams come true. You've done so much amazing work that has just blown me away. And faders, if you don't know, this guy here is a filmmaker, a director, an editor, the lighting guy, the sound guy. This guy does everything and anything regarding films here in Japan. This guy's been doing freelance for years here, doing some incredible work. I saw your work that you did for with Anthony H, and it was absolutely spectacular. Blew me away. I mean, it was amazing, absolutely amazing. And I saw your documentary with the camera guy,
Michael Harris.
Yes, yeah. Michael Harris. Yes, yeah. That was unbelievable. You filmed, you showed that at Tokyo Art Tank, and that was absolutely amazing. And all your work, everything you touch just turns to gold. I love it. And I can't wait to see all the stuff that you're going to be doing in the future, too. We're kind of talking a little bit about some stuff that you're working on. And I'm just like, yes, yes, yes. Oh, my God. I'm so excited for you to be on the show right now. This is awesome. We've been friends and faders for quite a while now. And I think it's about time that we give some love to the bottles. Hi, kanpai.
Hi.
Oh my goodness. I'm drinking a Sapporo. What are you drinking?
Brewdog, man.
Brewdog. Have you been to their bar in Roppongi?
No, not yet.
What? You haven't? Oh my God. They got a bar in Roppongi. It's absolutely fantastic. I think they have like 28 of their beers on tap. My favorite is the Punk IPA, by the way. That's an incredible beer.
You know my life. I really wouldn't have time to go all the way to Roppongi.
It's like you stopped away.
I mean, no, but I came here for you.
Oh.
That's different.
We'll go there later. They got great chicken wings, and they have really good. What was it? I was really wasted. I think it was fish and chips. Yeah, I think it was fish and chips.
So they're more like a UK pub style?
Oh, yeah. Brewdog is Scottish.
Oh, that's different. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I love Scott stuff.
Yeah, Scottish stuff is absolutely fantastic. The one thing that I wonder if they have is the what you call it, deep fried Mars bars. Do you know about that?
No.
Okay, all right. Here's some knowledge, dude. Get this. All right.
You sure it's not the Snickers? I heard about the Snickers.
No, they don't. Well, maybe they do Snickers now. But back in the day, at least 20 years ago, they used to. Well, I'm sure they do. I can't imagine them stopping. Mm. Okay, all right. In Scotland, if you go to Scotland or if you're interested in going to Scotland, if you go to a pub, you can get a deep fried Mars bar. They take a chocolate candy chocolate bar called Mars, right? Which is like caramel and chocolate and some other stuff, right? It's a candy bar. They're all the same kind of. And so they take it, they deep fry it. And then when they take it out, it is absolutely awesome. I've never had one, but it looks absolutely spectacular. Mm-hmm. You might have a heart attack. There's a lot of calories. The cholesterol is through the roof, but it is absolutely amazing. It looks great. Yeah. So I wonder if they have that there.
We'll find out.
We'll definitely find out. Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah. I love pubs. Pubs are great, you know?
Yeah, actually, because we're talking about deep fried things. So Jersey, mm-hmm. They have deep fried hot dogs.
In Jersey, of course.
Yeah, so like...
I'm not really surprised.
No, so like I did... I had a deep-fried hot dog with chili and cheese. And ever since then, I have never saw it anywhere. So maybe I shouldn't talk about that. Maybe I should make that a business thing, huh?
You should.
I should make that in Japan.
You should. There's a lot of there's a lot of international restaurants popping up here now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's always been quite a few and stuff. And actually, some of them are our sponsors. But I just heard of like two others that just opened up. So, yeah, that might be a thing. Deep fried hot dogs.
Yeah.
That's got to be so bad for you, though.
No, no.
It's cholesterol.
How about this? I'm going to trademark this. It's going to be Earl's Deep Fried Hot Dogs. Kosher dogs only.
You know that? Well, you know what? Actually, you know what? If you want to make a lot of money, you don't have like a restaurant per se. Mm. You have it like how it is in New York.
The pop-ups,
you
know? Yeah.
You know, you got like a little hot dog, like a wagon, and you got wheels. And you just walk around Roppongi, Shibuya, Shinjuku. You can go to Kabukicho.
Yeah.
I mean, hookers love hot dogs from what I understand. If you're in that neighborhood, dude, I'm sure you're going to make $1 million a night. Yeah.
And then the Yakuza will take 10%.
Well, maybe. Yeah, well, I don't know about that. Dude, no, but everybody loves a hot dog. You might be able to just like give them hot dogs.
On the real, actually, there's this guy, not for nothing, he was from Philly. This is when I was living in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Philly. He was doing that. He was doing hot dogs, like not the deep fried ones, but he was doing hot dogs and he was walking around with a wagon.
Mm-hmm.
In the daytime, he would go towards the actual like government district of Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And then at nighttime, evening time, he'll go to Waikiki. Mm-hmm. And at nighttime, he'll go back to the government district of Chinatown where they had all the clubs.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, that was his living. I mean, and to live in Hawaii is expensive, especially where he was living. He was living in Hawaii Kai. That's where, for you guys who don't know where Hawaii Kai is, that's where all the million-dollar homes are there.
Mm-hmm. Hawaii Kai.
And he's made business and made cake off of hot dogs in Hawaii. God dang that guy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about this. I mean, you buy in bulk, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, how much does a hot dog cost? It's not that much. You buy in bulk, not that much. Oh, what, 12 cents or something? You have a hot dog in a bun with relish, mustard, and ketchup. I mean, seriously, selling hot dogs, I mean, that's where the business is. In fact, this is going to be the last podcast that got paid in Japan because I think I have a new industry to jump into. Finally, sayonara podcasting. It's been great while it lasted. You can keep my liver too.
Nah, it's crazy, man, because like, you never know what, like, that's the beauty of Japan, right?
Yeah.
Like, you never know what is going to become the next best thing, right? You never know how you're going to make a living.
Yeah. Yeah. But do you remember the pancake craze when all of a sudden there's like pancakes, like shops everywhere? Harajuku, there's like 20 pancake shops. You're like, dude, pancakes is just like, that's like flour and water.
Yeah. It started from Hawaii.
Really?
Eggs and things. So eggs and things landed in Harajuku.
Uh-huh.
And because what happened, I forgot the Japanese guy's name, but he bought it from a Hawaiian owner.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you still have the eggs and things in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And then they first dropped in Harajuku. Harajuku had a line.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was blocks down. Because for some reason, anything labeled Hawaii in Japan just gets mad love.
Got bit in Japan, Hawaii.
Yeah, that, I mean, as Americans, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's bonkers, right?
Like, yeah. Dude, making a pancake is like super duper cheap. Pancakes, dude, you know, pancakes originated in whatchamacallit, the Depression era. In the Depression era, people didn't have any money, right? Mm. But they had huge families back then, you know, because they didn't have rubbers. Mm. So, you know, everybody had like fucking like what, like 10 kids. And all of a sudden, some dad that doesn't have any money or anything, he's like, how am I going to feed these kids? Flour. I can get some flour, get some water, and then I can feed these kids. You know, maybe put a couple of eggs in there, and they made pancakes. That's why it's called a pancake, because it sounds good. We're having pancakes. Oh, Dad, real cake? Kinda. There's flour in there, you know? And then maybe they added some honey or something or whatever, maybe some blueberries, and the kids, you know, they ate it, and, you know, they survived enough to, you know, like, survive the depression.
Yeah,
so pancakes is like the poorest food that the poorest people ate, and now they're like $20 a pop.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, I still can't fathom it,
mm-hmm. right?
But anyway, so.
Oh, yeah, so this isn't the pancake episode. Sorry about that. So
No. I digress. I was going to talk more on pancakes, but then I thought about it, and I was just like, no, I don't want to go. Because it's more about Hawaii, less about Japan, right? If I start talking about pancakes.
Well, Hawaii and Japan are, you know, really, really deeply connected, you know? And not going back to, like, not even talking about the bad stuff, talking about, like, current stuff, you know? Because, like, there's so many, like, there's, like, so many people from Japan that live in Hawaii, that work in Hawaii, that have, like, Japanese restaurants and stuff there, and vice versa. There's a lot of people from Hawaii that live in Japan right now, mm-hmm. and a lot of people in Japan love to go to Hawaii on vacation for surfing and shopping and just, you know, getting away from Japan, but getting mm-hmm. kind of close to America without having to deal with the traffic.
No, there's traffic there.
There's traffic in Hawaii?
Dude, there's traffic. Oh, my God, bro.
Is really?
Dude,
I've only been to the airport.
Dude, the Californians moved in. That's a different podcast we can talk about. Like, literally, like.
Oh, those Californians.
The Hawaii. It's not just the Californians, but.
Oh, those dudes from Michigan and Ohio.
No, definitely not them. They never come to Hawaii.
Denver.
They never come to Hawaii because there's no snow.
No. People from the Midwest don't like the snow.
That's really?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, dude, I'm from Michigan, right? Okay, so the thing is.
But you never went to Hawaii.
Well, no, because we drive down to Florida.
But that's my point.
Florida is the Hawaii of the South.
But no, but that's my point.
Miami is the Honolulu of the South.
Right. So no. So basically my point is this, right? Californians, right? They'll fly over to Hawaii, right?
Yeah, it's like 6 hours away.
Yeah, but. Michigan and everyone else, they're just like, I'll just drive down, you know, I'll just stay home. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, no. A lot of people want to drive down to Florida. Yeah. Florida's cheap. Well, no. Okay. All right. I haven't lived in America in 23 years. All right. Yeah. So, yeah, it used to be cheap.
No, we're probably the same era, right? Like, I'm
pretty sure we're the same age.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine anybody wanting to go to Florida. But then again, you know, like...
No, dude, Florida's awesome.
Like, okay. Yeah.
Florida's got a bad rep. Florida's got a bad rep. And the reason why it has a bad rep is because of the Sunshine Law, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Sunshine Law, right, I'm probably completely wrong about this, but the Sunshine Law is like, they don't, like... They don't sugarcoat the news, or they don't edit the news. If something bad happens, they put it out there, right? They don't give a shit.
Okay.
Unlike other states, you know, like some states, you know, like there's like a mass shooting. They're like, let's talk about this cute little puppy that had 30 babies. 30 puppies. Isn't that amazing? That's never happened before. Let's highlight this story instead of that story. Okay. Or it's like, we don't care. So they advertise, or not advertise, but they just basically put everything out there.
Yeah.
So like, Florida has a bad reputation. You know, it's probably wasn't the best idea to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then also a lot of bad things do happen in Florida. Let's be honest.
So I was, I'm not sure if I told you, I was breakdancing professionally, like back in the day.
What?
So,
wow. The man of many mysteries.
So I was in an event
mm-hmm.
with a guy at that time was a part of our crew
mm-hmm.
and we went to Miami
mm-hmm.
and he's from Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm from D.C. So the situation, just to let you know, the situation wasn't like something that caused trauma. It's just I felt like, okay, why would I want to go to a warmer, more populated place that has the same thing? So that's where that's just letting you know where my motivation is coming from, why I don't have so much love for Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Not the people, just the place. So I was staying in Hialeah. And, we did the B-Boy event. I went to a convenience store I got grilled up by four different people. Like literally, like looking at me like someone was like, who are you? Whatever, right?
Were they also dancers?
No. That's just the locals. The locals of Florida. And then after that, I remember.
Were you wearing a winter coat or something? How did they know that you were from the? Wait a second. You're not from around here, are you? You're like,
no, but
you look like one of the guys from South Park.
Well, I definitely don't look Colombian or Cuban or whatever, right? So that was primarily the people there, right?
Yeah.
And so I was definitely dressed Washingtonian, all black, so they were just like, yeah, this guy, right? But then we end up going to his house and everybody they fell asleep or whatever, right? Next thing you know, man, a shooting happened right in front of his house. Like, just imagine waking up to clack, 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 clack.
Like, this is the worst alarm clock ever.
I'm just like, I already thought I was in D.C. I was like, wait, I'm not home. What's going on right now? So Florida, the Gators, the bugs. Florida. I'm pretty sure you're a good place. I just didn't have enough time to give you time to accept you.
I only went there on vacation. Had a great time. The food was fantastic.
Dude. Oh, the food is fantastic. Yeah. The fucking Cuban sandwiches. I can curse on this.
Yeah. Okay, I've already said a couple of F-bombs. Yeah, it's okay.
I'm sorry. Anyway, Cuban sandwiches are magnifico. And the salsa clubs.
Good cigars.
Yes. The illegal ones, but they're good.
Yeah. Cigars are fantastic down there. I mean, when I was a kid, I never had the cigars. I think the last time I went to Florida, I was like 13. So it was a long time ago. So this is like Florida from like the 80s.
Okay, so that's what I'm talking about. Okay, I'm talking about Florida from the 90s. The 90s? Oh my God.
Did they have Disneyland? It was over.
They had little children lined up in a row, like
making their shoes and their toys.
Yeah, right. Oh my God. Yeah, Florida. Florida is like on some, they're on some. Yeah. Anyway, we're in Japan. That's why we live here.
We're talking about traffic. All right. So we're talking about the traffic in Hawaii.
Yeah, traffic in Hawaii is horrendous.
Yeah. But it's not as bad as California.
No. The Californians are in
Hawaii.
In Hawaii.
Can you tell who's like a native Hawaiian and who's not a native Hawaiian?
Is that a joke or is that like?
Let's say walking down the street and you're like, oh, that guy's a tourist, you know? Or if they have like Ohio State, like a sweatshirt on
No, because see, the thing is, like, some of the people from Hawaii have family in Hawaii, in Ohio State.
So they'll
wear their shirt as homage to their family or whatever, stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
Because, like, you got to think about it. Hawaii doesn't have a football team. And we have a football team. We got Hawaii University.
Yeah.
But
I thought every state had at least one. I mean, it's part of the culture to have a football team or two.
Yeah, but
not hockey.
I mean, if we really want to get to brass bones of it, like, Hawaii is not really America. Like, let's just throw all that. It's like a hodgepodge of Korea, China, Japan, America, and Polynesia all mixed into one. That's Hawaii. Like, and a lot of people who actually respect the island, cling on to the culture of the indigenous. So for me, it's like there's a difference between native and indigenous. Like, I would be a native.
But you're born in D.C.
Right. But I would be native because I lived there for 20 years.
Okay, fair enough.
So indigenous, you would have to like be nurtured, raised, born, bred. That's Hawaiian. That's what I believe, because we'll leave that for another podcast. But like,
I'm saying that a lot in the show, I think.
But I'm natural American, and I'm indigenous American. My family didn't come from like slave ships and stuff like that. I'm like American American. So once I moved there, I think that's where having my mom also being Jamaican and my dad being like indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
I had a quick understanding of what it meant already for Hawaiian people.
Yo, what's up, Vader? Scott Vader Japan has got a new sponsor. Our new sponsor is Gamuso Bar, located in Asagaya, Tokyo. If you're kicking it in Tokyo and you want to get your groove on, get your fade on, you better get your ass down to Gamuso. Gamuso is located in Asagaya. It's about 11 minutes from Shinjuku Station on the Chuo Line. Gamuso has weekly bands, weekly performances. And hell, if you got your own event and you want to hold it at Gamuso, we'd love to host you. So contact Gamuso at www.gamuso.com. That's www.gamuso.com. That's right. Gamuso has not only beers in the bottle, but beers on tap. We've got every drink you want, so come on down to Gamuso. Gamuso. And if I'm working, tip me.
Have your attention, please. Attention.
Hey, yo, what's up, Vaders? Johnny here. You know I love booze and news, but I also love art. So come on down to thespiltink.com and check my art out. I've got tons of stuff there for you to check out. And I've got paintings, I got prints, I got videos. And I tell you what, if you like a painting, I could probably sell it to you. And I tell you what, if I can't sell you that painting, I will definitely sell you a print. I've got prints of all my work. Prints are about 2,000 yen each, about 20 bucks, but if you buy two, you get the third one for free. So come on down to thespiltink.com. Yo, and on top of that, I'm looking for commissioned work. So if there's something that you want me to do, I can make it for you. Just check out my stuff and see if you like my style. And if you like my style, I can definitely paint you anything on canvas, paper, whatever. I've done it all. So come on down to thespiltink.com. That is thespiltink.com. Thespiltink.com. Proper. How did you get into movies?
Let's see. So it's weird because I was never like the kid that was like, I was like, oh, I'm going to do movies, blah, 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 because I came from a poor background. So like cameras and all that other stuff was just like not in my vision. But I always respected films. Mm-hmm. I loved films, like especially art house films, like the really weird ones.
Like what?
There's this one Canadian director, and he does a lot of dance films, and he superimposed films on it and stuff like that. But if you want to go even older back in the day, Seventh Sign, Casablanca, Wizard of Oz, and then once you start getting upper and upper, like, you know, like when Spielberg started coming into the scene, E.T., Gremlins,
Critters. Oh, Critters, yes.
Yeah, like... but horror films.
Yes.
Horror films.
Like The Hills Have Eyes.
The Hills Have Eyes, but no.
The first one, not the second one.
I'm talking more like Army of Darkness.
Texas, oh, Army of Darkness is great,
Texas,
yeah.
Chainsaw Massacre.
Friday 13th, Part 6.
Friday 13, Elm Street.
Child's Play 1.
Child's Play.
1.
Yeah.
Not 2, or 3, yeah. Or yeah. 4.
Yeah, man. Like I for some reason was really immune to horror. I wasn't as like, you know, like Pet Sematary.
Pet Sematary's good.
Dude,
yeah.
My sister could not watch it. I'm younger than her. And I was just sitting there like, oh wow, this is so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I already had a understanding that this was fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so horror films was like that. That's you know, yeah, that's my thing. And
cool.
That's coming up. Soon.
Yeah. Have you ever made a horror film?
That's coming up.
Not soon. Yet, but you're going to make one.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoa, dude, that's awesome.
So pretty much my background is a lot of action, a lot of horror, but I'm infatuated with love stories.
You're like all over the map.
Yeah.
Love stories? Like what kind of love stories? Like Pretty Woman love stories or like She's 16 Pretty story?
Like no, like Notebook. Like,
all right, next question.
Yeah. Like, so like, yeah, I there's other ones I can't name right now off the tip of my tongue, but there's like a lot of different films that really shaped and mold me.
Mm-hmm. You mean we're from the same generation. So do you mean like movies, like love stories? Like, I mean, was it like Pretty in Pink or 16 Candles?
No,
or
like,
even like,
I'm talking about like High Fidelity.
Oh, High Fidelity is a great movie. And like, oh, that was fantastic.
And then like
John Cusack.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah,
Last Summer.
Last okay.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm like I said, like I have even more films that I been influenced by that mm-hmm. name. I just right now I just
well we're like three beers or four beers deep or something. I don't know. But yeah, Bader's that happens. The more you drink, the less you remember, which is sometimes a good thing. All right. So what do you do now? Like, what's your specialty? I know you know he does everything, Faders. This guy, when it comes to movies and films and like what, like regarding like making movies and films and documentaries, this guy, everything and anything he can do and he can do to like the T, dude. This guy is like all aces. But what are you doing right now? What are you specializing in?
Okay. Makes me sound better than I am. I love this guy.
No, I love this guy, but it's true though. No, it's true. Let's be honest. You're awesome, dude.
So I would say my specialty is whatever it is that moment is what I'm feeling. So mm-hmm. for instance, right, if I want to direct a film, I'm going to direct it. Mm-hmm. If I want to support somebody and help them mm-hmm. through editing or through shooting it or mm-hmm. like, I'll do that, you mm-hmm. know. Lighting was the first thing. This is a funny fact. So lighting was the first thing I ever got into because I went to Art Institute of Washington.
And, one of the art institutes.
Yeah. So
okay, cool.
So I went to Art Institute of Washington and they had a extracurriculum class mm-hmm. called Firewire, which mm. they were making film. So I literally like it was doing a lot of stuff, but there's so many egos involved. And like I had this thing like, I don't deal with egos. So
cool.
Very
cool. Respect.
So we piggybacked off a story called Little Red Riding Hood. Everybody knows that one. And then we made something called Disconnected. And during that time, I was just like, you know, the dude was better than me at writing. So I was just like, all right, you write. And mm-hmm. but the same dude wanted to direct. And I was like, okay, then you direct. And the other guy wanted to do this, camera guy. Da, 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 da. Nobody wanted to do lighting. And I was just like, I'll do the lighting. Mm-hmm. You know, get in when you fit in. So then all of a sudden, I just like started doing lighting and I was just, yeah, because all the horror film background, it made it easy for me. I was just like, oh, wow, this light can do this. Oh, I had time to play with it. And so, yeah, I would say I started off in lighting, but now I just don't really light unless it's my photography.
Holy shit. Are you saying that you took the shit job back in the day when you're in college? You're doing that, but you mastered it, which means now when you're making your big films, you know all about the lighting. So when like you're like setting up like the whole shot and you're getting everything all set up with like the actors, the actresses and everything, you're like, all right, lighting guy, do this. You can tell them exactly where to put the lights and how yeah. to do it. And you're like, you know what? Tungsten ain't going to cut it. Switch that with this one. Boom, do that. And then basically you like pretty much don't even have to troubleshoot because you've already done all that work beforehand because you did it before. Dude, that is awesome. I love that. So that is great.
And it goes the same thing with like
take notes, Faders. Take notes. If you're going to get in the movie business, do the shit job that nobody wants to do because in the future, boom.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not really, I wouldn't call it a shit job because the lighting is everything.
Well, it is, but nobody wants to do it.
Nobody wanted to do it because everybody wanted to be.
It's not the shit job. You're right.
But, I mean, it's like, you know, but now I think now that because of YouTube University, everybody's starting to understand that the light is most important.
So Except for me. My podcast. I mean,
this is a podcast.
Yeah.
It's not a
Anarchy Radio. Yeah.
Like, this is perfect lighting for, you know, this.
Thank you. I was kind of embarrassed when you came in. I was like, this is the setup. Start drinking.
I know, right?
Are you at Harajuku with some out-of-town friends or your family or significant others?
Yeah!
Do you want to chill and drink beer and eat sandwiches while your friends overpay for glitter unicorn socks?
Yeah!
And the flavor's gonna make you complete at Harry's Sandwich Company.
So come on down to Harry's Sandwich Company in the heart of Harajuku, right off Takeshita Street. See you there!
And we are back. Okay. All right. So, all right. I totally forgot what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what alcohol films, does.
Yeah, alcohol does. And yeah, like a 20-minute break too.
Actually,
okay. So how did you get into the film business?
So that's what we're talking about, yep. Actually. So
I remember you're talking about the lighting.
Lighting, yeah. So I got into lighting.
You got into lighting. You mastered lighting. You did the one job that nobody wanted to do, mm-hmm. and you mastered it. And now your films have amazing lighting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say amazing. There's some films that are just like, I wanted to capture like realism.
All the films that I've seen have been absolutely amazing.
Okay. Thanks.
I mean, unless there's a film that I haven't seen, you're like, thank God he hasn't seen the one.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of those. I mean, every filmmaker has those. Like when I was in Hawaii, I think I completed like 3 or 4 feature films.
3 or 4 feature films?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And then and I was working with this guy.
Some guy named Spielberg.
He didn't know what the hell he was doing, but mm-hmm. I would DP and edit.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't happen until after I met another guy named John Brecky. Who introduced me to the other guys. But at first they were working together, but that's a whole different story. Then I met a guy, Sean Hyatt, and he was a proper DP. And he was like really director of photography for those people. Because I know when you're drunk, you know, you hear DP, you think that there are other things. But so he's the director of photography. He's a really good one from Hawaii. He started like noticing what I was doing. And mm-hmm. then he was asking me, oh, so what school did you go to? And I was just like, I went to Art Institute. So what was your major? Because he thought I was like, I understood the camera. At that time, I didn't really understand the camera. I just understood that if I messed with this ISO here and if I saw a lot of specs, that's not where I want to be at. And then I was just like, if the light was too bright, and I couldn't see something, or if it was taking away detail, I didn't like that. It was just all natural. That was just like from watching movies. I mean, every person should watch film if they're going to be making films.
Hmm.
So he saw what I was doing, and then he started helping me out with tips and tricks here and there. So that made me a better camera guy. And how I became a camera guy was because I was first an editor. I was editing like stuff I was interning at KOHN News, which is the news in Hawaii. And I just fell in love with editing. I don't know why. It's just editing was something that was natural for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like cutting wise, I guess. I would say it was natural because I was told from other people who are editors that were like, okay, for some reason you got the instinct to cut at this point. You know how to cut, but there's just some technical things that I didn't understand, which they put under this put me under their wing, and they just helped me out. Andrew Magpot, my big brother, he is a guy who is beyond words, helped me get into the business. Because first of all, it started with the internship. Because Kenny Elcock, another Trinidadian I met in Hawaii, who got me to get the internship inside KHON. And then after I met Andrew Magpok, even to this day, we still are plotting this, you know, make movies all the time. So he won an Academy Award, actually.
Did he really?
Yeah, he won an Academy Award for making graphics for Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey?
So he worked for Oprah Winfrey.
Wow.
Yeah, and so basically you see where I'm going with this. Like, the way I learned was through just straight up, like, learning from people who are actually good. And then now I'm working with people who are just learning from either YouTube, or they learn from kind of like school. Our methods are like Zen Shigo, like super, super different.
Ludicrous.
Yeah, it's super different. Like the way I work and the way they work, I work and I have a solution and I'd say, do this. They like to be like, but no. And I'm just like, okay.
Wait, are you talking about Western people in Japan making movies? Or?
Yeah, like I'm talking about Western people and even Japanese. Like, you know, so it's like they
the perspective of making the movie is different, right?
Like, yeah, they deliberate on decisions. like, yeah, so it takes longer to make and stuff like that. I can see if it was like a passionate piece and stuff like that, but some of these people are kicking out like Nike commercials or whatever, and I'm just like, yo, dude, just do that. Just move the camera. Why are you trying to, like, I was taught, that was my first rule I was taught as a camera guy is if there's a weird angle or if the subject looks weird, move the camera. Don't tell the talent to move. Move the camera first. Like, I got, like, everywhere in Japan, everybody's just like, talent, this way, this way, this way. Unless, like, the background is absolutely needs to be, like, a certain way, you don't tell the talent to move. You move your camera. You know what I mean? Like, because you pick the location. Obviously, if you pick the location, it's going to be superb any direction you go to. So just move the camera. Because if you tell the actor to move too much and they're thinking about what they have to do at the same time, you know, some of these people, some of these actors are not equipped to handle too many tasks. So that's the first thing I learned. And I learned that from Sean Hyatt. And then, Andrew McPuck. Because I did it twice when I was a young, stupid guy. So
that's how you learn, man. Mistakes.
Yeah. Anyway. So I got into the business through that. And then when I got to Japan, I got into the business by way of Flavio Guzman, who's now DP, before at the time was like a first AC. He kind of like, he knew my wife and we met at a Zion, I think it's called Zion. Some group that was trying to make a safe place for filmmakers at that time. So we met there.
What, the Gaijin Eye guys?
I'm not sure. But I think it was called like Zion or Zeon or something like that. But Anyway, like pretty much like he knew my wife because my wife did the score for a film that they made.
Cool.
And like, so basically when he found out I did film and I was like looking for work, he just started putting me in the system, like, yo, come work with me. So that, in short, that's how it started in Japan. How it started in Hawaii, it was via Andrew McPock.
Like, if you come to Japan, you want to get into the business, do you need a reel? Or can you just come here and start making connections and talking to people and just helping out and starting at the bottom and just kind of working your way up? Or do you need to have some kind of like background experience?
It's good to have background experience if you're really serious about this art.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have background experience, but you're very intrigued, like you as a person will have to show that you're really about it, you know?
All right. So you work in a lot of like shoots that are like for clients, like for example, Nike, Reebok, let's say Coca-Cola and stuff like that, whatever, corporate clients. What is a typical day like?
A typical day like is we look at pretty much a shot list, mm-hmm. right? And then we're like, okay, let's recreate that shot list as much as possible. And then whoever the DP or director on set or whatever, but they'll look back at the client and they'll just like have the monitor and just be like, does this look good? And da, da, da. And they'll be like, yeah, this looks good. And then we'll just like shoot it. So like
So the client's there the whole time while you're like shooting?
Yeah, basically. Come on, think about it. That's Nike and that's like Adidas, that's like whatever, you know? Like they're going to have their people there on set to make sure everything is going the way or not straying out of the way of corporate like imaging or, you know, what they want is going to be done, mm-hmm. right? Some of them leave early because they're like, oh, we got these guys, I trust them, and they'll leave early.
Lunch.
But some of them will stay the whole time, and some of them would try to like pretty much stomp all over the direction where it's going. Like, no. it's so funny. Like so corporate stuff is a blessing and it is a ruin. Like, so that's why like I'm trying to really because you know, right now this is like the age of AI, right? So like I'm really trying to step out of all of the stuff where they hold back my reins And now that I have a lot more power to do what I want to do, that's what I'm going to focus on. And I have a lot more people. Put it this way, I found a lot more people to back what I'm doing. And I'm going to continue to press on to make my original stuff and do my stuff that I want to do.
Do you, talking about AI, do you think AI is going to eventually take over commercials? Where like basically a client's going to come up and be like, well, we don't need you anymore because I'm going to go to AI. And they pick up their phone like, make a commercial for Nike and make it really cool about a basketball player making a slam dunk. Okay. And all of a sudden, boom, there you go.
Well, first of all, I have AI on my phone. I mess around with it. I play with it. Mm-hmm. Like
for video?
For video, for pictures, whatever. I just play with it because I'm you know what I mean? Like,
know your enemy.
That too. But it's not my enemy. It's basically some code that some dude created to stir up some things and make people double think and double check, but they don't realize what they did. They don't know if they made the next Terminator or if they made the next best tool for humankind. Like that's the thing. That's so everybody who's scared is going to take your, oh, AI's going to take my job. Dude, we don't even know if it's going to take our lives yet. So like, why worry now? Mm-hmm. So I implement it. I use it. I adapt, you know, like, you know, kind of like, you know, I hate to like say I Ching, but you know, kind of adapt, roll with it, you know, just like collateral.
All right, Sarah Connor.
No. I'm not, definitely not Sarah Connor. But you know what I'm saying though, right?
I know exactly what you're saying.
You just got to adapt and roll with it. You know, like that's what Tom Cruise said on Collateral. That's what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, I think AI is not a bad thing. It cleans up audio. So if you ever have bad audio in your videos, you can.
I just want to take out all the F words. So we get like a bigger audience.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying right now. So basically, for all the F words to be taken out, you would need a human hand to like adjust the code and adjust the text.
But what if it takes out the word friendship by accident?
I mean, once you say F words, it'll take out all the F words. Because remember,
I'm thinking of all the F words I've used recently.
Well,
for Friday, French fries. We were talking about French. Oh no, hot dogs.
What are we talking about?
Hot dogs, yeah. What were we talking about? French fries?
I think we said fish and chips.
Ah, fish and chips, yeah. That might have been before the show.
But anyway, what I'm saying is this. Basically, AI is I don't think it's going to be opposed to a... It's got to be a big problem if you are already trying to use it.
Cool. All right. So, okay. What are the difficulties of shooting in Japan and working in Japan?
The difficulties are there's always a boss who's a corporate boss and not an artist. He doesn't really, he just makes decisions. He doesn't really care about the actual artistic feeling of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that, you know. I mean, but then again, like when I do my own personal projects, I don't have to worry about that. I just do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But Japan's, they're a lot more freer in certain ways when it comes to shooting. Like, I can go to the park and I can shoot.
You don't need permits?
I mean, you do need permits, but if I'm not, you know, bringing a whole bunch of stuff. So Japan's way is this. If it's not in their face, they're not going to care about it.
Oh, as long as nobody complains.
As long as you're not, like, shooting other people and they're going into other people's face.
You're doing it on the train.
I've shot on the train.
Have you really?
Yeah, I've shot on the train. And on top of that too, you can rent a train. You can, it's probably going to be some loot, but you can rent a train and you can rent extras. But But my whole thing is that if you're doing some, like if you want to do guerrilla stuff here, if you're smart enough to be sleek, stealthy, and do things really clean and don't be obscene and don't interrupt everybody else's personal space, Japan is lovely. Like in America, like there's some places you just can't really shoot because people are going to look at the camera and they're like, oh, what are you shooting? Oh,
they're like your buddy ears.
Yeah, and you know what I'm saying? Like once you pull out a camera, they're going to go, oh, what are you doing? Yeah. In Japan, you might get like 1% of the time, you might get that.
Most people don't even care.
Most people just like kind of just do, you know, you've seen the walking thing where they're like walking like this and they see the camera and they're like,
oh, yeah.
Whoa, there's a camera.
Mitsuya Liquors. Yo, what's up, faders? If you're in Asia, if you're in Japan, if you're in Tokyo, if you're in Asagaya, you better get down to Mitsuya Liquors. That's right. For the most affordable prices in Japan, you can get over 300 different kinds of beer. That's right, over 300 different kinds of beer. And of course, they got all the shochu you need, all the sake you need, and of course, they got wine from California to Italy to France to New Zealand. They got it all. When I say they got it all, they really, seriously got it all. There's no joke about that. So get down to Mitsuya Liquors. And if you go in there and you say, got bit of Japan, you will be more than welcome to go into their back room and drink those beers that you just purchased. That's right. Got bit of Japan at Mitsuya Liquors. And three times a week, they have a sushi chef there. So get your sushi on, get your drink on, get your fade on, and come on down to Mitsuya Liquors, located comfortably in Asagaya, about 5 minute walk from the station. Mitsuya Liquors.
We are back. All right, man. So can you tell me some stories about like bad situations that happened on a film shoot?
Bad situations. I was in Beijing, China. And I was assisting director for a guy from LA. And props and camera got into a full-out brawl.
Props and camera. Those are completely different, like, departments, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so props, like, they handle everything that's in front of the camera, basically, like, couches, chairs, whatever, paintings, stuff like that. Camera team asked about one speaker that they knew that wasn't supposed to be inside the frame.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, can we move the speaker? And it took them like, I don't know, a good 10, 15 minutes to move the fucking speaker. So then the camera team got pissed off and like the dude said something to the camera team guy and he's standing on a table.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking down at him. He's like, what, what? And they're like, what, what? And I was like, I mean, you know, like I said, I'm from DC, so I know in a bad situation is about to pop.
Mm-hmm.
But how it popped, I didn't think it was going to pop like that. I thought he was going to jump off the table and then square up with the dude. Instead of hopping off the table, he like literally kicked the dude in the face from the table.
Like Roadhouse style.
Like he just went like,
Patrick Swayze that motherfucker in the face.
Wow. Like he was just like, yeah. And then next thing you know, it turned into a fucking big brawl.
No way. So yeah. The sound guys got in, the editing guys got in.
I mean, no,
the DPs, the grips. So, never fuck with the grips.
It's like, no. So it was just DPs in production. But still, if in China, if you see like the production, everything's cheap, but they can get a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So it was just like a lot of people just going at it.
And they're all fighting.
It didn't stop there. After we kind of let it kind of subside and we're like, because, like I said, I was assistant director. So the first thing I did was I went back and he's like my big brother. So I like, first I was on the table because like the camera team, they're like my dudes. So we're chilling. So I, you know, not incriminating myself. Some things I did. And then after that.
It was China. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But still. So like, I'm not going to talk about it. Like, so some things I did. And then I kind of went back and to check on the director because the brawl started getting bigger. And I was just like, all right, I got to protect my brother. So I just balled out and I went and I was just like, I had him behind me and I was like sitting there just making sure nobody was coming towards us. Then the props team had there's a hierarchy, right? So they're like the B team and the A team came.
What, they called them backup?
Yo, dude, these guys came to the door and they were going and like, I just remember after making sure the director was secure and chilled in the hub, because the fight started moving out to the front. So I went out to the front to check on the other camera dudes. And there was this one guy with a fucking a coffee kind of like pot.
Well, these are prop guys have weapons. I mean, the prop guys, they have like fake knives, fake daggers, fake guns. Well, I mean, it may be fake, but it still hurts.
No. This guy had a real metallic coffee like canister. And he was trying to hit one of my dudes in the head. And I was like, no, chill out. And I just held,
fuck you, lighting guy.
And like, I don't know the politics. I understand what's going on. So I try my best not to throw any blows.
Yeah.
So I held him against the door and he was just like trying to fight me. And I was just like, nah, that's not, you're not, we're no.
Don't drop brain.
I was like, so I just took the coffee thing from him and I let him go. Like, I was just like, nah. No, it's not happening. But yeah, I mean, me literally telling you about it doesn't even equate to what was really going on.
I can imagine in China,
like, and the cops came.
Yeah. And so you have like 100 people fighting each other, like a cowboy Western movie, right? In a bar or a pub or whatever. And then all of a sudden the cops show up, which is another 100 people on top of that. So
No.
And then people got like fake knives and fake swords and the cops got fucking real guns.
And this is why the American team, we all thought it was a setup, because like only like 7 cops came.
Anybody film this? You're like, dude, all star.
I'm not filming. I don't film shit in China because like I know they're looking at my phone. So
are they? Looking
at my phone, man. It, like once you're there, the first thing they ask you is your passport number and your phone number. So it's like they're looking into your phone. Like one guy who was on the team, was talking shit about China. He was like,
You can't do that in China.
Yeah, but he was.
I don't even do that outside of China. Nobody does that. You can't do that.
I mean, granted, for me, I enjoyed it, but a lot of the people from California didn't enjoy it because they're like, you know, they're all posh, right? So it's a little bit different. Like the hotels that they were in, they were just complaining about that, and they were complaining about like this, that, the other.
Yeah, like I went to
the cops showed up to his door
because he was talking shit.
Yeah, he's talking bad about China, and they came to his door. Like, yo, that was.
You can't talk shit about China. Don't do it.
That was another event that was kind of like weird happenings when I was on my trip to China. It was really weird. I enjoyed it. Everybody else was just like on some.
Yeah, China's great. We love China. China's fantastic. No problem. Good food, good people. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not saying that just to like, you know, clear myself. I'm just like, I actually had fun. Like, I hung out with a lot of the Beijingers, and then they were like, taking me to a lot of the places there. And like, so basically like the crews were kind of split. There was like the American team and then there's the Chinese team. But the Chinese team I was hanging out with most.
Really?
Yeah. Cause I was doing a lot of the BTS video too, because like I was,
BTS?
Yeah. Behind the scenes.
Oh, I thought you meant the band BTS.
If I was doing their videos, man, I'd be having.
Yeah, for a second I was like, whoa, dude. Shit, you're on a different level, man.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
No, but so basically, like, me and the Chinese peeps, we got along fine.
In Tokyo and craving soul food, we've got just the place for you. Soul Food House in Azabuchi Uban. Check out what we do at soulfoodhouse.com. Come by and taste the love. We look forward to feeding you.
What people don't understand is that filmmakers, real filmmakers, like, they take their life experience and they put it into their films. So that means sometimes, like, there's so many things that life presented me that I was, like, for instance, the crayon theory. I feel like I should make a film about it. Like, so many things that I look at life and I laugh about it, that I feel like that should be shown on a film.
Because
people who are not hip to the game, when they, for instance, right, I grew up in an era where like hip hop, where there's X-Clan and then they had a whole bunch of different rappers who have a really good way of words, right? So BDP, Boogie Down Productions, KRS-One, when he, in one of his rhymes, I can't remember the song, but like right now, the title of it, but he said television is broken down to tell, lie, vision. They tell lies in your vision of you onto the screen. The point that I feel that, like, because it was kind of a conundrum for me, because the fact that I end up loving film and making film somewhat, if you break it down logically, some of these scripts and some of the things are lies. And I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to tell these stories, I want to give positive morals at the end of it. I want to give a positive gain or a certain truths to the story. Like, because like people don't know in Hollywood, they've been telling the truth to your face for a lot of these films, right? When they talk, like, for instance, the Marvel movie, when they have Thanos, a snap of a finger, everybody goes.
Yeah.
Like, that all goes down to the theory where what's it called again? The world government, is it NATO? Not NATO. What's
New World Power.
No, not New World Order. No, the actual...
Christ, dude. Oh, God. Why do we drink so much?
No, dude. There's an actual faction right now that I can't think about. That where they sit down and they have
the Biden administration.
No, they don't. They don't think about shit. They don't think. They don't think. But I'm talking about. It's not WHO. That's a Health World Organization.
All right, here we go. All right, let's do some acronyms. NRA. Nope.
I love the NRA.
GTA.
No.
Let's see. There was another one.
Anyway, it's the world.
The IRA.
No. These people sit down to get around. It's a world, like, actual thing that everybody from.
WFO?
Yeah. Anyway.
That was the World Food Organization. No, we need more sugar.
All in short, they openly said, and because people don't really pay attention to these kind of committees, like you,
yeah.
When's the last time you went to your neighborhood committee, right? So these people they're like a world committee, which is like the equivalent of a neighborhood committee,
mm-hmm.
and openly said that the population of the world must decrease.
Oh, that's the Bill Gates thing that he's talking about.
No, that's Bill Gates is different. Bill Gates is a part of the preparation of it.
Well, Bill Gates said that the population should decrease by 70%.
Okay, but he said that. But
that's bad.
But also, there's this Frankfurt bank manager said that, or bank CEO said that.
Banksy, you bastard.
Not Banksy, yeah.
I knew you started off with the stencils. You were cheating, but we let it slide.
No, but all in short, right? Thanos mm-hmm. is like, you know, the five rings, the five top governments.
Yeah.
And with a snap of their finger,
yeah,
they can make people disappear. Like making the population decrease.
Yeah.
So like,
well, they need comedians, so we're okay.
But basically what I'm saying is, like, in the Hollywood films, they always have an underlying subjection information that they're feeding you. And so
after all that information, after all that story, after like 15 minutes, it came down to that line right there.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
So
that was it.
So,
God, I'm blown away.
But I had to give the information. So that's why when I make a film, I want the underground lining to be people are people. It's not the skin color, it's the character. It's all about who you are inside. Like, how your skin captures the sun is not the actual processing power of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of films that I want to make in the future. And those are the kind of films that I'm planning right now to make.
Hey, what's up, faders? It's your boy Johnny here, and it's a few days later, and I just got to say, before I move on to the news, that that episode that we just listened to was absolutely fantastic. I have known Earl for such a long time, and he is such a good friend and such a really, really down-to-earth and cool person. I mean, Earl is just awesome. Everybody loves Earl. He's great. And the problem is, though, I don't get to see him that much because he's always working. This guy is a maniac, man. He's making movies. He's making short films. He's doing a lot of corporate work. This guy is waking up early. He's staying up all night. I mean, this guy is just working nonstop. So for him to be on the show and hang out with us and get faded, man, it was absolutely a good time for me. I really, really enjoyed that podcast. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed it too. I know you probably wanted us to talk about film and the film business and the film industry. And you know what? We did a little bit, but we just had a good time and we just hung out. And yeah, you know what? It's kind of cool to have a podcast like this because, you know, I get to hang out with my friends who are doing really interesting things and just hang out with them and kind of talk about what they're doing, you know, and they're for their jobs, but also just, you know, talk about just normal things and fun things, you know, like hot dogs, deep fried hot dogs in Mars bars. Oh my goodness, that was from Wright Field. Anyway, Vaders, I hope you really enjoyed that interview, and hopefully Earl will be back. Well, actually, you know what? We're going to work on a project sometime in the next 6 months, I think. And after that, we'll definitely have Earl back on the show. And at that point, we're going to get really deep into movies. And I know he loves Scorsese a lot, so we'll talk about that. And yeah, we'll go from there. But now, as a lot of you guys have wanted, is for the news. A lot of you guys complain when we don't do the news. You're like, God, where's the news? It's Got Fit in Japan. Got Fit in Japan is about the news. Well, okay, here we go. We've got the news. I've got the news for you. All right, without further ado, let's get dirty. Man arrested for cutting high school girl's skirt with scissors while on bus. Okay, I think the golden rule of scissors is first, never run with them, and second, never, ever cut high school girl's skirts, especially when you're on the bus. I mean, come on, man, that's super dangerous. Police in Fukuoka City have arrested a 42-year-old man on suspicion of property damage after he cut a high school girl's skirt with a pair of scissors while they were aboard a bus last November. Police said Daisuke Iwamoto, a company employee, is accused of snipping a piece of the 15-year-old girl's uniform while she was asleep in a seat beside him, Kyoto News reported. Police said the girl didn't realize that her skirt had been cut until she got off the bus. Iwamoto emerged as the suspect after bus surveillance camera footage showed him sitting next to the girl. Police said Iwamoto has admitted to the allegations and quoted him as saying, quote, "I was curious about the fabric and material used in the skirt worn by the girl sitting next to me on the bus, so I snipped off a piece with the scissors I had with me," end quote. So, apparently this guy is a perverted tailor, and I wonder if he's going to have scissors when he goes to prison. I doubt it. Next story. Man arrested for attempted bank robbery in Tokyo. Could you imagine attempted bank robbery? You think he went in there and he's like, "Freeze, everybody, this is a bank robbery." Ah, forget it. And then he walks out the door. Police said in Tokyo, they have arrested a 57-year-old man on suspicion of attempted bank robbery. The incident occurred at around 12:40 p.m. Tuesday at the Mizuho Bank branch near JR Kameido Station in Kyoto Ward. Kyoto News reported. Police said Kazuto Inaba, a company employee, entered the bank and pointed at what looked like a handgun at an employee at the first information desk and demanded that he get him money. He went to the information booth and asked for money. This guy's an idiot on top of an idiot. Oh my God. Police responded to an emergency call from the bank and detained Inaba at the bank. The gun was a toy model, police said. Police said Inaba told them that he needed 500 million yen to pay off his debts. 500 million yen is about, what is that? That's $50,000. $50,000 to pay off his debt. You know, if he got a job, any job right now, within a year, he could make $50,000. So this guy is going to spend many years in prison instead of getting a job at McDonald's and working for his money. Okay, oh gosh. Let's see. Last sentence. There were several customers in the bank at the time, but no one was injured by the toy gun. Well, that's good. I'm really glad that the toy gun didn't hurt anybody. Bam, 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 bam. I got you. Remember that game when we were little kids? We played, was it guns or something or laser tag? Oh, my goodness. Okay. Next story. 45-year-old man arrested for arson after argument with his mother over breakfast. I will not eat these green eggs and ham no more. Oh, my goodness. Wait, did it say 45? Oh, my goodness. 45-year-old man. Oh, geez. When you're 45 years old, you should not be living with your parents. It's not good. Police said they have arrested a 45-year-old unemployed man in suspicion of arson after he set fire to his house following an argument with his 67-year-old mother over breakfast. You know, I used to think that 67 years old was really old until, you know, till the American presidents for the last like two terms were like, what, in their 80s? 67 doesn't seem that old anymore. Although Biden doesn't look like he's in good shape. According to police, Satoshi Yoshizaki set fire to the house at around 8:45 a.m. on March 8th, Kyoto News reported. Approximately 80 square meters of the three-story wooden house were completely destroyed. Oh, my goodness. Oh, man. A three-story wooden house in Japan, that means it's really old because they usually don't make them like that anymore. And they are beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. I love old Japanese architecture. If you come to Japan or if you're in Japan, try to go to the countryside and check out some of the architecture of some of the older buildings in the area that you're in. If you go to Niigata, Nikko, Kyoto, the buildings are absolutely spectacular. They're so, so cool. I love them. I love them so much. And actually, they're quite affordable. So if you're interested in buying, right now may be the time. But don't buy this one. This one's a house that you do not want to buy. Okay, once again, approximately 80 square meters of the three-story wooden house were completely destroyed. Yoshizaki was taken to the hospital suffering from smoke inhalation. His mother fled from the house and was not injured. Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness, thank goodness. Yoshizaki was arrested on Monday. He was quoted by police as saying that he got into an argument with his mother about food. Green eggs and ham. I knew it! I knew it! For food that they were eating for breakfast. Wait, shouldn't this guy be cooking his own meal? He's 45 years old. He then went into his room and set fire to a box of matches. Oh my goodness. Oh gosh. The maturity level of this guy is just astonishing. Oh, he's... Ugh. Oh, okay. Moving forward, Yoshizaki lived in the house with his mother and his younger brother, 42, who had left for work at the time of the fire. Oh, man, this poor little brother. Oh, my gosh. He's the only responsible person in this whole story. I mean, he's got a job. He woke up before 8 o'clock. He went to work. Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine coming home and finding your whole house, like, destroyed? Oh, my God. Because of your older brother had a temper tantrum about green eggs and ham or something? Unbelievable. I'd be so pissed. Okay, here we go. Last story. Man arrested for pouring urine on pachinko machine in Sendai. Police in Sendai, Miyagi Prefecture, have arrested a 48-year-old man in suspicion of property destruction after he poured urine, aka piss, on a pachinko machine, causing it to malfunction. According to police, Takehiro Shionuma, who poured urine on the machine at the parlor in Takehuku Ward at around 1:05 p.m. on Saturday, Kyoto News reported. The machine's alarm went off, prompting parlor staff to report the incident to police. You think he was quoted as saying like something like, "I know how to win! Pee-pee power!" Oh my God, so this guy peed all over a machine. Do you pee on it when you win or do you pee on it when you lose? Most likely when you lose. When you lose, I guess, oh, there you go. I guess he was pissed off. I'm so stupid. Oh, goodness. Security camera footage showed Shionuma pouring something on the machine leading to his arrest on Sunday when he returned to the pachinko parlor. Oh, my gosh. He returned. I guess they caught him yellow-handed. It's a stupid one, too. Get it? Because his hands are covered with pee. Police said that he... Police said that he denied the allegations and quoted him as saying that he doesn't remember because he believes he was drunk on Saturday. Okay, first thing, never ever gamble when you've been drinking, okay? That's how they get you in Vegas. They give you free drinks. I don't know if you've ever been to Vegas, but I have. And when I've gone to Vegas, boy, they give you the strongest drinks. If you say gin and tonic, they give you a gin and tonic. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's great. It's great if you're playing the slots, you know, putting in like, I don't know, like 50 cents or a quarter or something like that and pulling the lever. That's fine. But if you're really, really gambling and you're drinking, oh, man, it's a recipe for destruction. And maybe that's what pissed this guy off. Oh, man, Faders. And that's a wrap. I want to thank you guys so much for fading with us today. I had a really great show with Earl. I hope you guys enjoyed it too. It's kind of a drink along. So if you guys are drinking with us, that's super awesome. And, if not, that's totally cool too. And, I just want to plug Earl, SNS, his social media. Okay. Earl has Instagram and, all this stuff is definitely going to be down in the show notes. But if you go to Instagram, Earl 13, super easy, EARL13. He's got a lot of his photography up there. He's got some of his videos up there. He's got a lot of like up and coming projects that he's working on. Some really good stuff is on his Instagram. Subscribe to him there. Also, Earl Lewis has his own website. Yes, he does. And so go to www.earllewis.com. That's EARLLOUIS.com. Go there. He's got his portfolio, his resume, a lot of his work is up there. It's absolutely fantastic. And if you're planning on working with somebody in Japan regarding film or the film industry, or if you're going to sell a product and you need some photos of it or something, I would contact Earl. He's my go-to guy. Earl is awesome. He's super open-minded, super friendly, super cool, and he's just like the best person. So yeah, definitely contact him. And if you're not going to do that, if you're not going to come to Japan and work in film or anything like that, that's totally cool. But check on his work anyway, you know, and definitely subscribe to him on Instagram. His Instagram page is fully loaded with good stuff. All right. On that note, Faders, I want to thank you all for fading with us, and have a good day. Peace.
My little brother, a goddamn shit-sucking vampire. Will you wait till Mom finds out, buddy?
I've got a government job to abuse and a lonely wife to fuck.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Cows of pressure! I can't take it! I can't take it!
Excuse me.
We're going freaking!
We came, we saw, we kicked his ass.
Your move, creep.
Man, I will never forgive your ass for this shit. This is some fucked up Republican shit.
Suicide. Fuck it, dude. Let's go bold.